Maestro Stanley Clark, from what I understood, your primary artistic goal was to be a musician in the Philadelphia Orchestra, one of the big five American symphonic orchestras. Is it true that Chick Corea persuaded you to enter in the world of jazz back then in the late 60s?
Yeah, I was actually going to the university or music conservatory at that time, and I was very serious about entering a life of a classical musician, in particular playing in a symphony orchestra, and I wanted to play in the Philadelphia Orchestra at that time. There weren't too many African-Americans, maybe none, and I wanted to be either one of the first or the first, I'm not quite sure. But and so, you know, I was really practicing. I had a very, very good teacher that was supported me. But then I met Chick, and Chick is what I like about Chick. Chick is a he's a very interesting guy. He's a visionary, and he doesn't know it. He postulates or puts a lot of things out to happen in the future. So he says, yeah, let's get together. Let's do something. Let's play music. And he mentioned it in particular. He said, you know, you'll be able to play our own music. You know, that's classical music, but maybe our music one day will be classical music. You know? So I thought, yeah, great. And he seemed like a nice guy, so I thought, very nice, yeah.
You are one of the most gifted jazz musicians of all time. How was it for you, Maestro, to find your own voice in the jazz music?
You know, that's an interesting question. It's a question that many young people have when you're starting to play instruments. You wonder, well, how do I get my voice? That has to do more about who you are than the actual music. You know, the notes are always the same. The C or the B flat, it's sitting right there.
And are just signs.
Yeah, it never changes. It really has to do with, are you willing to play, be honest, and play what you want to play, not necessarily play what someone else wants you to play. There's always a balance there, especially if you're a working musician. You go play with someone else, he hires you to do this.
Yes.
But as an individual, the way you actually play your instrument, a lot of it has to do with what you want to do. It's very simple and very subtle. It's really just having a good well-being, and I think that has a lot to do with all the things that are around a person, like his family, his relationships with people, how he takes care of himself. And your voice will come out. It will naturally come out, but don't try too hard.
At the beginning of your remarkable career, you were a jazz purist, I think. It was also perhaps a way of life back then in those years.
You know, I was never the, say, quintessential or typical jazz purist. I loved a lot of things.
Yes.
But I could play with people that were jazz purists. I mean, I respect jazz. It's probably the ultimate music form that an instrumentalist can play, even much more in many ways than classical music, because classical music, it's more of a interpretive sort of art form. Play Bach, Beethoven, Stravinsky, and you learn how to interpret that music, and
yes,
you can become very proficient on your instrument and virtuosic, but still you're playing someone else's music. In jazz music, you can be virtuosic like Charlie Parker, but at the same time, you can write and create your own music. And there's a fullness, a completeness in being that sort of musician. So I loved it. But at the same time, I like jazz music. I listen to Jimi Hendrix. I listen to the Beatles. I listen to James Brown, Marvin Gaye, Miles Davis. John Coltrane was probably my favorite musician out of all of them. And, you know, I did a lot of things. And I listened quite a bit to classical music. A lot to it, yeah.
What would be the greatest virtue in a jazz musician, Maestro Stanley Clark?
You know, the greatest virtue, I think, is to learn your instrument, get the language of jazz, and play it, play your heart out, but be generous and pass it down to younger people. Reason being is because the real true life and journey of jazz music, the link that keeps it going is young people. Because when I was 18, 19 years old, I played with Stan Getz and Art Blakey. And those guys taught me how to play jazz. You know, particularly Art Blakey and Horace Silver.
Yes.
Taught me how to be in a group, how to play, think about your solos, keep your instrument in tune, show up on time. I had a bunch of great band leaders, and I was fortunate enough to play in a band that myself and Chick were the founding members of.
Return to Forever.
Return to Forever, and that kind of, I was able to learn all those lessons. I mean, Chick, you know, started out a little bit before me, and he's kind of like a big brother to me. But to me, generosity is probably the best virtue, I think, that a jazz musician could have. Surely Chick Corea was generous. You know, he was an older guy, had this, put this band, started the idea of Return to Forever, and he says, hey, you want to do it? I said, yeah, let's do it, you know. And he was always very generous to me, and I think that's a, we need more of that sort of virtue.
Yes. You are a big supporter of music education. How would you describe the relation between the teacher Stanley Clark and his students?
I think in order to have a really good group and be a good band leader, you have to be a teacher to some degree. You know, being a band leader is much like being in a leadership position in any field,
yes,
whatever it is. In part, you're kind of a babysitter. Number one. Number two, you're kind of an accountant. Number three, you're a motivator. You have to motivate people. But at the same time, in order to, for the music to move forward and really expand, you have to be a teacher, because your vision, you have to be able to articulate that vision to other people. And if they're young people, you have to take special care to articulate a vision without making a young person feel like you're like the principal of a school, or you're like a school teacher with a hammer hammering something over their head. And I get better at it all the time.
A word about your band, Beka Gojiashvili, an incredibly gifted young musician.
Beka is a force of nature. He's someone that's been playing for a long time, maybe not just this lifetime.
Yes.
And, you know, he's a special musician, and I take special care that he's able to feel comfortable playing, so that when he goes forward and has his bands, he does the right thing. There's been many times in history where great players have went off the track.
Yes.
Because of other reasons, drugs, bad relationships, just all the normal things that plague human beings can happen. And so it's important when a person is young that their foundation is real strong, like
this, to find the balance.
To find the balance, and he's doing that very well. I think he's just very impressive, actually.
Michael Mitchell.
Mike Mitchell is like a triple force of nature. He's like a wild man. And Mike is the same thing, you know. You know, what I'm really impressed about with these guys is that to be so young and be so proficient on their instruments and be so, they're almost like unusually experienced to,
yes,
be so young. And I tell you, you know, this generation here of musicians, I think, are the first jazz musicians to benefit from social media. Because when I ask Mike Mitchell, he'll play a beat that I know that I played with Art Blakey or Max Roach. I said, where'd you hear that? He says, YouTube.
Yes.
Okay.
Too much technology.
But it's good.
Yes.
I'm so happy, because a young guy could sit home and figure out a language. And like, okay, I want to understand jazz. And go on YouTube, and it's all there.
Yes.
Every single bit of it is there.
Yes. So it's nice. And the fourth member?
Cameron Graves. Cameron is kind of the silent one. But Cameron, yes, is, in many ways, he has some talents that the other two don't have. He is a serious composer. and he's a really a classical pianist.
Very subtle.
Yeah, very subtle. Yeah, I've been encouraging him to make solo records because he can play these moods with acoustic piano. And
so much colors.
Yeah, yeah. He agreed to come in my band because he's actually an acoustic pianist.
Yes.
And so I said, well, listen, Becca's going to play acoustic because he doesn't really play electric. So can you? I know you play some electric. He says, okay. No problem. So he comes. He's a tremendous musician and a really serious composer. And so I'm looking for good things from him in the future.
It was an incredible and amazing, not of this earth experience for the Romanian public. How was it for you to play in Romania at the Garena Jazz Festival?
It was great. The thing that I like about the audience last night, they have two qualities that
yes.
I really like in an audience. One is the ability to listen, right? Number one. But at the same time, they have a big heart. The heart is really big and you can feel that. You know, sometimes you can be in front of an audience and it's all heart, just crazy, people flipping up in the air and running around, all that sort of stuff. And that's fun too, but I think when you have the kind of music that we do, it's kind of, I can't just call it just straight jazz. It's, you know, years ago in the early 70s, they used to call our music jazz rock. That's okay. Fusion music, the word fusion, I don't even like that either. But whatever it is that we do, we really touch the senses of people with intellect and heart at the same time. And when an audience can experience those two things, that's my favorite audience because they travel with you. I felt like the audience took a ride with us, a journey, and then we all ended up at the same place. That's the best thing. When the artists and the audience and travel and they end up at the same place. It was joy at the end of the night. It was beautiful.
Your children are gifted musicians.
Yeah.
How it is to guide your own children in music's gigantic and miraculous labyrinth?
They had no choice. My kids, you know, and I sometimes apologize to them, but when they were young, I played all kinds of music for them. Like I would play Miles Davis for a second, then I'd put on a Rolling Stones record, then I'd play like Beethoven, and then I'd go over here to James Brown, and so they were like, you know, what's what? So they grew up like that. You know, my oldest son, Chris, he's 36. He writes music for television shows and sometimes movies. And he's starting out in a little acting career right now, and he's really talented. He knows more about a lot of music than most people. He's not a jazz musician, but he knows more about jazz than most people. And then my daughter, Natasha, she's an actual singer. She's going to join us, I think, 5 concerts from now.
Yes.
and actually sing with us. She
Great.
She sometimes comes and sings with us. She's very, very, very talented. Natasha Grama, that's what she calls herself, and she's very good. And then my other son, Frankie, he's a filmmaker. We sent him to a film school in Boston, but he's a drummer, and he loves avant-garde music.
Yes.
If the music has a beat, Frankie goes the other way.
Yes. How would you define now in 2015 the essence of Return to Forever group?
You know, it was definitely one of the major groups that influenced a lot of people. You know, it's funny, when you play in a group like that, many times you don't realize. I didn't realize the scope of the band, the reach of the band, how many people were touched by that band. We've had two reunions.
Yes.
You know, we had one in 84, and then we had one recently in 2008, and we did it twice. And especially the 2008 tour, I hadn't been in Return Forever for a long time. And when we hit the stage, it was like, I felt like we were like the Beatles of jazz or something. People were going crazy, you know, guys my age jumping up like they're kids or something, you know. And it was, it's really something to see, because I think at that point I could see all the work that we had put into it. And it was really a very powerful time in music, and particularly in jazz, because I think that group also introduced jazz and many other art forms within music to other people, to younger people that came and said, wow, these guys are great, maybe I'll go check this out. And that was another thing that I'm very proud of, that we were able to do.
How does it feel to be a Grammy winner? Are the distinctions really important for a jazz master like Stanley Clarke?
You know, I think so, yeah. I think, you know, anyone that would tell you no, like some guy, yeah, you won 4 Grammys, and he goes, ah, yeah, yeah. He's lying. It's fun.
Yes.
You know, the show, every year it becomes much more of a, there's a word I'm looking for, it's a spectacle.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Like, it's not like it used to be. Years ago, it used to be awards, you go there, maybe one or two performances, simple performances. And you get up and awards, and people give long speeches. I kind of like that. And now it's more of a spectacle, you know, less awards. They actually have 2 shows. One that's, they call it a pre-telecast, where you can go online and you can get to see the whole show. And what they show on TV for everyone is kind of, you know, Kanye West or, you know, Taylor Swift or whoever the popular artists are at that time. And a few of the important awards. But, you know, it's fine. It's a great award. You know, the original Grammys were really the small.
Yes.
And very easy to carry, easy to break. Now they have these big things. Because to a musician, the Grammy is like our Oscar.
I know.
You know, so, you know, I've won 4 now. And it's great.
Yes.
It's nice. It looks good in the house, you know. Yes, my Grammy's over there.
Yes. I would like to know details regarding the development of your right-hand electric bass technique.
Well, that the slapping technique, you know, the slapping technique is originated by Larry Graham in Sly and the Family Stone. When I first saw him do it, I didn't really notice it so much because his bass sound was in with so many other things. But there was a drummer friend, Lenny White, said, oh, this is what showed me what Larry was doing, and he had a very crude way of doing it. He was like, this is, I said, really? That's what it is? And I actually learned from a drummer, Lenny White. So yes. I took it and did it my own way. And it's fun. It's a handy technique. It's a lot of fun. People like it. It really elevates music and gives it a rhythmic reinforcement that's tremendous.
What connections can you establish between your spiritual world and some of the characters of the films for which you wrote some remarkable music?
Well, I love writing music for films. I don't do much of it as I used to because I'm kind of back to touring. That's really what I love. But I still love film composing. I think the thing about film composing I like is if I'm using an orchestra and using other types of musicians, it gives me a chance to be complete. I learned how to conduct orchestras. I learned how to write for orchestras. And it's nice to be able to do that.
How would you describe your collaborations with some great rock musicians like Joe Walsh or Stuart Copeland?
Well, like, you know, this kind of ties into the earlier thing I said, in that I have friends in all kinds of music.
Yes.
Jazz music, rock, country music, funk music, R&B music, classical music. I don't really draw too much of a distinction between the actual players themselves. If a guy is good at what he does, and he's my friend, he's good, and I can play with him. I can play with Joe Walsh and have just as much fun playing with him as I would play with Herbie Hancock. The same.
Or with Richie Kotzen.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I love Stuart Copeland is one of my oldest friends. I knew Stuart long before the Police,
yes.
You know. And he was playing in some bands, and he's just a great guy, very up guy, up-toned individual. And, you know, we live close to each other, so I see him a couple times a year. We hang out, we have lunch, dinner, whatever, you know. So.
What is your relation with the universe? You were a member of the Church of Scientology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, your first question is my relationship with the universe is I'm with all of you guys.
Yes.
We're all here creating it, trying to keep the planet from blowing up. You know, there's a lot of a war and violence in this world. And the biggest thing that, for me, two things, is to conquer hunger and the violence in men. I think if, and some women. You know, women naturally don't have the, for some reason, men, we have this thing that we have to, you know, in order to be men, we have to maybe kill each other. Women, it's different, you
yes.
know. And I think, I like, you know, when you look at the world from a planetary position, this will be the first time that you have so many women in positions of power. Brazil, I believe, maybe Argentina, Germany, potentially the United States, and a few other places. And it would be interesting to see the dynamics of the planet
yes.
if all these women get together and they kind of, you know, talk to us men.
Besides the music, what things are important to you?
I live in an area kind of like this.
Yes.
I love the outside, man. I love my, one of my favorite things to do is just come out. You know, I grew up in the city in my earlier age, but I have to admit that I enjoy this much more. So I'm a kind of a guy, I like simple things, you know. I like animals, horses, dogs. All just very simple things in life. And those things are really important to me, you know, because I think it's a balance.
Yes.
You know, we can get into thing. It's a beautiful dog. It's probably 10 or 11 years old.
Yes.
Love that dog. And so, yeah, for me, the important things is simple, keeping it simple, keeping your life as simple as possible, but at the same time handling all the complexities in the world, because there's a lot of stuff out there. And the balance, it's very easy to do, you know, if you just take the time and balance yourself, and can be done.
Now, in 2015, how would you describe your remarkable journey through music and life?
It's been very rich. I've played with some of the greatest musicians in the world of all time, actually. And I've written a lot of music. I've experienced a lot of things. I think I've been around the planet 100 times. I have friends all over the world. My life is actually very rich. I have Grammys.
Yeah,
my life is it's a beautiful life. I have a great family, you know, a very creative family. That's very important to all those individuals, just to be creative. And that's a great thing. You can't beat that. There's nothing better than that, you know.
Thank you very much, maestro. Thank
all you. Right. Yeah. Very Thank good. You. Nice question.
Thank you.
Nice. Really nice. Hello, this is Stanley Clark, and you're listening to Radio Timișoara.